Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On the Dean's List, a podcast that celebrates the art of conversation with your host, Dean Latticer.
Thank you, George. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. I'm Dean Latticer, and you are on the Dean's List. Our guest this morning is business coach and consultant Barry Demp. He's worked with well over 1,000 individuals as a business and executive coach over the past 19 years, headquartered in Troy, Michigan. He's earned the distinction of Master Certified Coach from the International Coach Federation. Barry is in demand for facilitating workshops, seminars, speaking engagements, and engaging in custom coaching programs, which foster a comprehensive and holistic approach to both individual and organizational development, assuring both practical applications of personal as well as professional levels. I think it's relevant at this time because here we are recording this near the end of the year, and people are starting to say, I don't want 2014 to be like it was in 2013. So I felt it was definitely time to bring a man of his experience, insights, and wisdom onto the show. So let's give a warm On the Dean's List welcome to our guest this morning, Barry Demp. Good morning, Barry. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Dean. It's great to be here.
Barry, one of the things that I've always enjoyed about you is you have kind of this touchstone quote that you've used as part of your practice, part of your work. When patterns are broken, new worlds emerge. This seems pretty core to your coaching philosophy, but share a little bit about that, because I think that's a great jumping on point to learning about yourself and the work you do.
Well, fundamental to this idea of coaching, and since you said we are going into the new year, you know, many people create like New Year's resolutions, and unfortunately the odds against the New Year's resolution actually coming to pass are very low. Some people estimate that over 95% of New Year's resolutions never come to pass. So with the quote, when patterns are broken, new worlds emerge, I engage people in a conversation of what new world they actually would like to emerge. You know, do they want to get healthy and fit? Do they want to save more money? Do they want to achieve a particular goal that has eluded them? And that new world emerging is kind of like a lever, and it's a lever to have people look at their existing behaviors and try something new and different over an extended period of time. So the opposite of that quote is what they refer to as the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over, and yet they expect a different result. So when people partner with me, they really need to be open and receptive to look at their existing patterns, see that they're not necessarily serving them, and be open and receptive to trying new and different things over an extended period of time.
I really believe that we talk about change. We oftentimes pound our fist on the desk or on our table and say, yes, I want change. I want it to be different. And yet change is scary. Change is uncertain. And turning that corner into the new life that we prescribe that we want, again, if more people were willing to change, I think people would feel more self-actualization. They would be achieving their goals. What do you think really is the blocks on people? Is it that they don't see what they need to do? Or is it that they can't engage in the process? What do you think holds back people from making the changes they want?
Well, you know, we would probably need a lot of time to go into the psychological aspect of that, but I'd like to pinpoint maybe one or two fundamentals. I learned somewhere once that people resist change because it's associated with either real or perceived loss. So we don't want to lose control. We don't want to lose familiarity. We don't want to lose comfort. Rather than the aspiration of pursuing a new and better future, it's what am I going to lose? What's going to be taken away? So when things change in our organizations, in our lives, people usually hold on pretty tightly to those things, even if they're not so comfortable. So the idea of some fear of loss, whether it be real or even somewhat imaginary, is usually what gets in the way of people actually making those necessary change. And actually, the whole coaching profession is geared towards supporting people in pursuing achievable and sustainable and sticky change.
You've been doing this almost two decades now. What are some of the top issues that business leaders and professionals are seeking your support with, and has that changed over your career?
Well, probably one of the top issues today, more so than almost ever before, is the area of time management, getting more done in less time, and how that relates to having both balance, both professionally and personally. So the allocation and utilization of the 24 hours a day that we have is usually an important process. My favorite quote, or one of my favorite quotes other than when patterns are broken, is called, time is the coin of life. So how we spend our time and who we spend it with and what we spend it doing is quite important to how we navigate. So that's a top priority for a lot of people. I think most people are looking at simply being more productive, achieving more with less or in less time. Sales and business development is a top area, and perhaps the single most overarching area would be in the area of communications and building and establishing quality personal and professional relationships.
I want to go back to time briefly here, because I know the promises is, when I was a younger man, was that technology was going to be allow us to be so much more efficient. Technology was going to maybe create even a smaller work week. And yet it seems between entrepreneurial-driven organizations and the demands of changing organizations, it seems like people are having to dedicate more time towards it as opposed to less. And I kind of scratch my head on that one. What happened to the fulfillment of the fact that we might be, some people speculated we were going to have 32-hour work week as a result of all embracing all this technological change?
Well, that idea is actually still very possible. You know, there's a book that's out there called The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. And this idea of greater productivity and greater leverage and so on is very, very observable today. The challenge is everybody stepped up their game. Everybody said, here's the new level of productivity. Here's the new benchmark we're shooting for. And unfortunately, 8 hours of productivity today could probably produce 12 hours of what it used to be even 10 years ago. Unfortunately, everybody wants 14 hours worth of productivity, and that causes us to use technology in a way that even steps up the game even further. But we are an extremely efficient, effective, and productive society. We really kick butt. And at the same time, the standards and the benchmarks that our people are putting out there just simply get higher and higher. So for some people, you get to establish your own guidelines and benchmarks and results that you want to produce. And if you wanted to work 32 hours, you probably could achieve 40 hours worth of productivity that might have showed up 10 years ago.
You also mentioned communication. And as a professional communicator, I find that the rules have changed just since, say, 2004, when I first hung out my shingle. Interpersonal communications has changed. Obviously, the whole tsunami of social media and working through third-party leverage. What do you see in your practice that's changed, and why are people coming to you, Barry, for better communications?
It's interesting. My coaching actually practice is a little bit different than many people. I do a vast majority of my coaching in person. Mm-hmm. I am in southeastern Michigan, and where and when it's possible, my clients actually like to visit with me in my office. Of course, we use the phone, and we do some Skyping, and we obviously use other forms of communication. But there's a real importance to this idea of nose-to-nose and belly-to-belly interaction. And I think we really can't get away from that from the standpoint of social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, other types of media. I consider those auxiliary and complementary and even amplifiers to real-world relationships, but I don't think it's possible to replace that real world. I know you, and I like you, and I trust you, especially when it comes to certain things that are very important in terms of our relationships with people we do business with.
And yet the technology seems to be putting barriers before it. I know in the age of technology, and one of the reasons I think networking has exploded and using social media, because I remember when I started my business career, you could literally get somebody on the phone. I was sharing with somebody, you could get a producer at a radio or a television station. Now a lot of those positions have been downsized, but also voicemail hell has created, and it's hard to get a hold of these people, or you need to come somebody, if you're pitching an editor, you need to come as hot as you can, fall out and say, this is why this is as of interest to your listeners. And I know other sales professionals and other business professionals, it's almost as if you've got to hit your main stride as soon as you say hello. Tell me about your experiences or any ideas that you have about working with people in order to be able to create better rapport or be respectful of people's times instead of having to almost show up and throw up and just blurt at people. This is why this is important to you, Barry.
Well, there's no question that we're living in a very over-communicated society, and unfortunately we have to put blinders on or even stick earplugs in our ears to prevent the onslaught of it all. And yet, when we really have something very important and appropriate to share with somebody, we actually have to be a little bit of cool, calm, and collective, because if we do blurt things out or come across as overly enthusiastic, we appear to be some form of telemarketer or something like that. That's, again, where relationships really create inroads and opportunities. So when people know you and like you and trust you and have had an experience of interacting with you, they can create entry points where previously you wouldn't be able to do it. It's kind of like that idea of a cold call. Nobody wants to pursue any form of cold calling these days. So we use our relationships and the people who know us and like us as ways of warming up those relationships and as a foundation for people who will eventually accept our communications. Even old-fashioned kinds of communication can be helpful. If you really want to get through to somebody, consider a handwritten note or a letter or something a little bit distinctive, because very few people are sending those things out today. So some of the old classic things to take the time and the attention of getting somebody's attention. An email is not going to get the job done when somebody's got 12,000 of them in their inbox.
Agreed on that. I was doing a speech, and it was for career counseling, and the topic in the room before I got there was, should somebody send a thank you note, and how should they do it? And that was what I had shared as well, is that to be appropriate, and yet sometimes that traditional, it's almost revolutionary to be traditional these days.
But whenever I get a personal note, it actually sits on my desk for a day just to kind of remind me that there is a real character and a real quality to the integrity of the specialness of key relationships. So, I'll keep one of those on my desk because it's such a rare thing to come across the transom.
I shared with the person, I said that my thought would be that many individuals might even share this with a number of people because it is such a scarce commodity to receive. I know that even when you get a handwritten thank you note for something personal, perhaps a wedding gift or something old-fashioned traditional, it doesn't seem like that, or even a handwritten birthday card as opposed to one of these online services that send them out for you. You kind of take the energy from that, and I think that's kind of where we need to go back to as communicators, is having more interpersonal times and more warm feeling sort of stuff instead of thinking that we're all mechanical about it.
Well, you're simply pointing to the fact that we have tremendous, tremendous amounts of choice. We have a choice of publishers. We have a choice of coaches. We have a choice of accountants and attorneys and financial advisors and bankers and doctors. Well, how do we make that choice? And it really does come down to the ability to create authentic and genuine quality relationships. And I don't think you're able to rush that with social media and other mechanisms. You just got to take your time until it feels just right and that you trust it.
Our guest this morning on the Dean's List, Barry Demp. And one of the things I find interesting is that you work with a lot of professionals, because gone is the day when an attorney, accountant, a doctor, a financial advisor, a banker could just hang out their shingle and the world would beat a path to their door. Talk about what these professionals need to do in order to be a stronger leader and rainmaker for their organizations.
Well, you're absolutely right. Obviously, we have a lot of choices, as I mentioned, in each of those areas. So if you actually did some of the math and say, well, gee, how many attorneys are out there? How many CPAs are there? How many financial advisors? And they seem to be quite plentiful. And the real question is, well, how do you get the business? If there's so much demand and so much need, everybody seems to be satiated. But again, we have choices now. So the idea is, how do you brand yourself? And everybody who's going into that profession just doesn't learn to be a CPA and do audits and does taxes, or you don't learn about litigation or mergers and acquisitions or estate planning. You not only have to be really, really good at what you do, but people need to choose you and say, I prefer to work with Barry or Dean or somebody else like that. So there's organizations out there, whether they're chambers of commerce, there's community service organizations like the Kiwanis and Rotary and so on. There's even nonprofit organizations, and people can serve on various boards of directors. And that's one way that these people distinguish themselves. They contribute, they get out in the community, they help other people, and it just so happens that they happen to be a CPA or an attorney or a coach or somebody like that. You just can't sit in your office waiting for things to come to you. You can't just build it and they will come anymore. You need to get out there. You need to be a player and a contributor to the community. And in doing so, people get to recognize your value proposition and the kind of qualities and character that you have. And they just so happen to say, well, I could use an estate plan to protect my family, or I need to build a will or trust or an estate, or I need to have somebody work on my new business that I'm establishing, and so on.
I think one of the things that with that nugget there especially is seeing people as a whole person, and that's key these days too, because yes, we want to go to the best practitioners we can, but we also want to feel, or at least I do, I want to feel that this person is a whole person, that they have compassion or empathy, or that they have passions and motivations. And oftentimes when we see people in their specialty, we see this focused professional, and working at people, again, through networking, through social organizations or nonprofits, you get to see the different sides of them. You get to see when they're touched, or you get to see touched by something that happens, a good giving, or you get to see them as maybe enthusiastic and motivated, when oftentimes when we see them professionally, they might be a little more laid back. So that's an outstanding tip for those folk to make themselves more accessible in really meaningful and, I think, important ways, as well as giving as a part of them. One of the things that I also liked was the fact that you coach coaches. You, as we said in the intro, you are well recognized in your industry. I want you to talk a little bit about the coaching profession, because I consider you to be one of the leaders, the innovators in this, and yet I've hosted networking events, and I've been to networking events where somebody was downsized from a large organization, maybe a Big Six accounting firm or one of the large industrial organizations here in our region. So suddenly they went to the office supply store, printed up a bunch of cards, and suddenly, hey, I'm instant coach here. Let's talk a little bit about that business, because you coach people and you're an advocate for your industry. Let's start with when we're looking at bringing in an outside consultant or a coach, what should somebody look for when making that decision?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, I think it's always a buyer beware. I think we all need to recognize that we need to vet and explore people who are presenting themselves. Like you said, the barriers to entry in the coaching profession are small, if not negligent. Therefore, anybody can simply say, I'm out of work and I'm a coach, because people like to talk to me about the ideas and strategies that I might come to mind. About almost 20 years ago, an organization established itself as the kind of global organization for coaching. It's called the International Coach Federation. I found out about that after 3 years of actually being a coach, because I simply just declared it in the very beginning, because I thought I made it up in the early years. I jumped on an airplane and went to Houston, Texas, and I saw that about 325 other people from all around the world were making this up, and they wanted to establish some guidelines and criteria and competencies for what is a coach, so to speak. People should always look at this idea of, when somebody says they're a coach, they should be looking for, well, who says, and what are your credentials, and what is your background, and what makes you credible? So I think the credibility aspect are something that people should absolutely look at in terms of their selections. It's also helpful to have somebody close by and look at the people who that individual has worked with. Are they credible? Are they competent? Have other people that you know and like and trust use them, and give them the thumbs up in terms of their credibility as well.
As we were talking about the people who you coach, oftentimes these are people who are either lawyers go through the bar or doctors go through the AMA. In even a state like Michigan, we license everything from beauticians to boxing referees. Should there be some sort of third-party independent certification to make sure you just don't get somebody who their business is down, so they said, oh, I'm going to do some coaching? Should there be some sort of mechanism maybe for coaches to keep the better ones but weed out the bad ones?
Well, I agree that is a very heavily debated topic. I think in terms of any profession, there's no question that how do you distinguish somebody who is credible from not credible? Now, there are people that are fantastic coaches that have no formal credential. There's also people who have some credentials that aren't the most optimal and fantastic individuals. So buyer beware, so to speak. One of the things that's happened in the recent years is major academic institutions are creating coaching curriculums as part of their institution. And those curriculums are quite in-depth and quite lengthy in terms of jumping through that hoop and demonstrating competencies in those areas. So I think just the marketplace demands a high degree of proficiency and a high degree of professionalism wisdom and a level of expertise that can be demonstrated. And I don't think you can get away with just hanging up a shingle and kind of winging it these days.
I want to, you talk about curriculum. I want to seg over into your curriculum because anybody who goes to your website, there is a wealth of information. You really are a giver and very wonderful in the fact that you share a lot of that. There's ebooks available. You have a daily email. And I want you to talk a little bit about the tools that are on your website, because when people come to you, they should be ready. And most importantly, you give them a lot of opportunities for self-evaluation, and you also give them a lot of opportunities to make some initial changes. Talk about what's on your website, and I also want you to talk about your wonderful morning email that you send out.
Well, I appreciate that opportunity. You know, if there is you mentioned the term networking earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the premises of networking, really good networking, is that networking is about giving. It's about contribution. It's about serving others. And when you come from that place of abundance and generosity, givers really do gain. But you don't give to gain, you give to give, because that's the right thing to do. When people are evaluating coaches, they want to kick the tires. They want to test the waters. They want to see what's this person about. You know, what's that person's philosophy? And I think websites and social media and blogging are ways in which people can kind of take a little bite of the piece of pie, so to speak. So a number of things that I've made available to people who are listeners to this call and also to people who simply go to my website is I wrote three books. One is called Masterful Networking, one is called Masterful Relationship, and one is called Time Management Strategies and Tactics. And quite honestly, those books came out of a failed attempt at blogging. My first attempt for blogging was about 18 months long, and I don't think I got more than 20 people to read that blog. And yet,
really?
I created a tremendous amount of content that actually was the foundation for these books. Instead of them not wanting to read a two-minute blog, they now get to read a 20 to 25-minute little book on that specific topic if it's of interest. And people can get that from my website by just going to dempcoaching.com. Go to the right-hand side, put their name and email, and then put the password Barry Demp with no spaces in it, and they can download those three books for free. One of my hobbies is that I've been a collector of quotes for most of my professional life, and I've considered quotes as little pearls and of wisdom from people both today and from the past. But I always seem to use those quotes in my coaching, and I thought, well, I wonder if people would be interested in a little coaching commentary and maybe even a small exercise to apply that quote and that idea to their life. So I developed the Quotable Coach. So if you went to thequotablecoach.com, you could put your name and email, and every morning, Monday through Friday, you get a quote, a little commentary, and a small exercise in 30 seconds or less, just to kind of kickstart your day. And we've been fortunate to actually have, we've just exceeded the 1,000 subscriber rate, and that's a free service. So people get a little nugget of coaching every single morning. So when I give all this stuff away, people say, well, what do you charge for? And quite honestly, I'd like them to reach out and say I'd be interested in taking a look at what coaching would be like for my organization or myself in terms of what I'd like to achieve. So this gives them a little kind of bite-sized morsel and a little taste of Barry Demp, and they get to say, gee, I'd like more of that, and I'd like to talk about some specifics professionally and personally that I'd like to achieve.
It's interesting because a lot of speakers, coaches, consultants I've experienced are very product-driven, buy my this or do my that. You're kind of taking the opposite approach where you're giving people, literally, you're giving them more than just a morsel or an hors d'oeuvre. You're often giving them a banquet here between your three books, your Quotable Coach. Weigh in on that, because I think there's places in both sides. As a publisher, I see the ability for people to have books and have products, and yet I also know a lot of people, it's that's the way that they say, well, I push somebody down the funnel through doing that.
Earlier we talked a little bit about the idea of the internet and social media and things of that sort. There's different ways to kind of funnel people into the money-making strategies that we may have. The blogs and the books and those types of vehicles are very helpful in creating web traffic. So the number of people that go to the Quotable Coach, last month, somewhere close to 3,500 people actually went to that website. And that's linked to the Demp Coaching website. So when people do, let's say, a Google search for a business coach and they put Michigan in there, or an executive coach and they put Michigan there, or even a personal coach, over the last 3 to 5 years, that strategy of giving and the fact that people find that information useful and credible has driven my analytics for my websites much, much higher. So actually last year, about a dozen business opportunities came directly from people seeking out a coach in the southeastern Michigan arena. And I got to be considered as a viable candidate for those coaching assignments. That strategy actually does generate value, but in a secondary way to the actual coaching and consulting that I do.
Our guest this morning, Barry Demp on the Dean's List, talking about change, talking about growing, talking about making steps on it. One of the things that I've seen a lot of organizations is they hit that plateau. It's the hard fight to get up the mountain here, and you're setting your goals, and you're putting forth the energy and the effort, and then you start to make a few dollars, and things start to happen, and you hit that plateau, and then maybe things backslide or just flatten out. Give us a thought to spark us moving back up the mountain or moving towards a new direction. Is there anything, when people come to you with that, is there any simple wisdom that you can share with us?
I guess the issue of plateauing is a very common one for most people. Sometimes we call it getting into a rut or getting into a funk and so on. And sometimes simply engaging in people having a little bit of an inquiry to take a look at their current situation and where they are. Usually when people are plateaued, there's no longer a gap. So what I'd like to do is I'll introduce a concept to the listeners. It was first described by a gentleman named Robert Frisk in a book from like the early 90s or so. He called it creative tension. And what he basically said was creative tension for an individual is the gap between their reality and some vision for the future. So what I would suggest is for people who are plateaued or even an organization who is kind of flat is that the gap that exists between their reality and their vision for the future is very limited or non-existent. So what a coach would do is they would distinguish the reality for that organization or individual, but what they would do is draw and tease and explore what that vision for the future would be or could be well beyond where they're currently at. And suddenly that vision for the future becomes a compelling and attractive mobilizer for that individual to kind of rekindle their spark and initiate new and different actions to get there.
I like the way you shared that wisdom with us, that we need to have creative, not just analytical and saying, okay, I want to make more money this year, or I want to accomplish more or do more, but have that creative perspective on it. I think that's so vital to us as business owners, entrepreneurs, or leaders in our organization. One of the hindrances I see, though, with lasting change is oftentimes when we're in our context, employees, coworkers, family members, and people get uncomfortable with change or differences. We talk about the courage it takes for us to change as an individual, but when you come home and you start trying to change, or when you're in your workplace, there are workplace rules and social values and that kind of systemic change that oftentimes it's easy for us to, as individuals, to say we want to do things differently. Talk about how you work with your clients, or even if somebody's trying to facilitate change in their own world. Talk about the strategies that you would help people coach through to improve more of their global situations, Barry.
There's actually a book that I would encourage people to explore that I found very helpful on that subject. The book is called Influencer, and the subtitle of the book is The Power to Change Anything. This remarkable book points to a specific kind of idea. And the idea is related to this concept of support. So if we assume that somebody has a goal at the beginning of the year, they are personally motivated, and hopefully they have the ability to achieve what they want. But like we said, in most cases, they're unlikely to achieve that result. Maybe only 5% of the time do they achieve that. And what this book would suggest that's missing is that there's other forms and other levels of support that most people don't necessarily have in adequate amount. So the second kind of support is what we call social support. So you pointed to the idea of coworkers and family members and friends and colleagues, maybe workout buddies or personal trainers or coaches or mentors. It's essential, no matter what goal you're pursuing, that you have a level of social support where you really have people in your corner advocating and supporting that effort. Otherwise, your own intentions and your own desires are simply inadequate. The third and final element of support that they refer to is called structural support. These are all those non-people-oriented ways of supporting. It could be as simple as a post-it note. It could be your life vision statement on a plaque on your wall. It could be a reminder on your refrigerator to eat your fruits and vegetables. Lots of different ways of supporting and structurally reminder. Today we have smartphones, and on our smartphones we have apps for virtually everything. So we have apps for weight loss, apps for how many steps we've taken, all kinds of things of that sort. So I would invite people to look at creating sustainable change requires both personal and social and also structural support to really make those results lasting.
So going in with the idea of knowing that coworkers or family members need to be as much a part of this process rather than sitting there and saying, okay, I want to lose weight or I want to close more sales or I want to be a better public speaker. We need to engage those people around us in the process so they can be supportive as a part of that process in order to lose the weight or to achieve the financial goals we seek.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people who are seeking mentors or people in their industry or people a little further on the path on them and coaching and mentoring I perceive is a little bit different. Talk about both. We're talking about support systems here. Does it make sense for somebody having coaching to also have a mentor, or how do you see those roles being different, and how do you see those roles working in concert with each other?
That's a great question. You know, the mentoring aspect of things, if you look at the how people went through the old apprentice to craftsman to master in the early years, whether you were a blacksmith or whatever it would be, there was a kind of partnering, an internship, a collaborative partnership with people. A mentor, in many ways, is somebody who's kind of been there and done that. These are people who have expertise and experiences that they can share that wisdom and share that baptism of fire with people so that perhaps we wouldn't make that same mistake. So mentoring is a little bit of a consultative, a little bit outside in, sharing wisdom and ideas with an individual. Coaching can include aspects of mentoring. Coaching comes from a place that a lot of the answers lie within you. The nature of a coaching interactions is there's a high degree of inquiry and discussion and powerful questioning that discusses the reality for an individual, the vision for the future of the individual, and even their own creative thinking and idea generation of what they could do to move from the reality to that better future. So I would say in my interactions with people, I'm about 80% coach and maybe 10% mentor and 10% consultative, where that combination supports that individual in getting to where they really want to go. But for the most part, coaching is a little bit more inside out, mentoring is a little bit more outside in, and comes from a perspective of, I've been there, I've done some of these things, I can share that with you. Just like a football coach might have had experiences and share those experiences by being on the gridiron.
So are there business leaders that you wish that would pick up the phone and call you or anybody that you could initiate? And let's talk about maybe a public figure or two that you perceive would benefit from your services and support some of the challenges you see them going through and what you think coaching would do to get them through their situation?
Yeah, I would be a little surprised if many of these people that are well-known in the world don't have mentors and coaches and advisors already. Obviously, I'm most attracted to, for myself, people of high character, people who tend to be very generous and giving. I like the term tipping point people, P people who have a lot of leverage, a lot of impact, and are really trying to make their world and the world a better place. So I'm very attracted to people who kind of swing for the fences, want to be the best that they could be, and also a highly attractive quality that I'm looking for is people who are interested in creating coaching cultures where people around them, they believe, deserve to be coached and supported and mentored and helped and assisted so that they can be the best that we could be. One way to look at that is just look at if you're a parent. We want to coach and mentor and help our children be the best version of themselves that we could possibly be or that they could be. And it's very satisfying being that. So all the clients that I work with, I actually train them to be a coach for themselves and a coach for those people in their world. And they find that one of the most satisfying things that they get to do is help people along their journey as well. So I'm not going to give you a specific name of a specific person. I'm just simply saying that, you know, we all want to make the most of our lives and of our career and of our relationships and of our families, and that people deserve the opportunity to partner with others that care about us and want us to be our best.
If people want to learn more about your services, I want you to repeat the ways to get in contact with you. I know you're a very generous tipping point kind of person yourself, that you are definitely a giver, and that between the wealth of knowledge on your website, the time you spend helping people, I think you make it easy and fun to be a part of your circle of influence, and most importantly, when people really want to gift themselves, you're there. So tell us the ways that we can access you, either through your website, repeat your website, your contact information, so people know how to get a hold of you, Barry.
My website is www.dempcoaching. That's D as in David, E as in elephant, M as in Mary, P as in Paul, and the word coaching with no spaces, .com. That way you can kind of get a little sampling. I encourage people just to Google me. Just go to Barry Demp and look me up, and you'll go to my LinkedIn profile and you can find out information. And I strongly encourage people, if they do those preliminary steps and they have a sense that they'd like to chat with me, they're welcome to call me at area code 248-740-3231. And I strongly would encourage people just to get a little sampling each day by going to thequotablecoach.com. And being one of over 1,000 people that get a little nugget of coaching each day.
And that's a powerful tool. You and I have talked several times about the quotes that you've sent out. I've even sent you a couple that I thought were worthy of even consideration. The only thing left to say is, Barry Demp, you are on the Dean's List. Thank you for joining us this morning. I truly appreciate your time and your expertise with us.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, Dean.
All righty, and that's going to do it for today. Again, dempcoaching.com, and Barry's accessible there. And again, you couldn't have a better advocate and coach and person to help you grow both personally and professionally.